Last submitter for the day is Civil Tech Limited.
Thanks for the opportunity to come and speak.
Good morning and welcome. We've read the submission and the evidence, so you don't need to reread that to us, but you're very welcome to highlight the key point that you want us to take on board.
Yeah, righto. So mainly two things really. Well, one that I didn't put in the second piece was just about the fencing. If you do a diagram of a drain, as I say, 2 metres deep and 1-to-1 batters on the side, at 4 degrees, get it 4 degrees to go back to get the fence in the position it should be. It goes back to 26 metres. Somebody needs to readdress the maths on that rule about the different distance back to cultivation. So 2 metre deep, 1 metre deep goes back 13 or so metres. And I think you really only want 3 metres of flat land between the edge of the stream and the actual fence or cultivation. So just something, somebody needs to do the maths on it anyway. Just means that 26 metres both sides of a stream on a dairy farm probably takes up about 5 hectares, which is 15 cows off every kilometre of drain you've got. But just about the other submission, mostly about the seepage part. I'm not a chartered professional engineer, so I come from that angle. I'm in a company with two of us and two companies in Southland have been doing probably most of the ponds. We think we've probably done about 750 ponds in Southland. As Howard said, his pond was perfectly good 10 years after the one I did that pond for him. Clay ponds aren't the issue, I don't believe. But anyway, most of those ponds are done now. And so I thought I'll talk to the compliance side of Environment South and ask them what is the leakage on ponds. So they came back and gave me sort of 5 that they had, and he said that was what was in his 5 years roughly in the council. There was two court cases, and I've got the inclusion of those court cases here, and it's quite a bit different than what the compliance manager would indicate that was the difference between certain qualified people and chartered professional engineers in that case. Misrepresented, I would say. There's also, I believe, more liners leaking in Southland at the moment. I've seen it probably about 10, and I only know of, well, there's those 5 that Simon's mentioned are leaking. Also in the background of this not several hundred pages behind it, but it would say in Southland's going to be 200 ponds requiring to be fixed, $140,000 to do that, and that's based on a 1,800 cubic metre pond. There's nowhere near. If you had 5 ponds in 5 years, a lot of those, there's ponds out there that were double ponds built in the 80s that are issues with them. And the compliance manager talked about some erosion and stuff going on, some of those old ponds need to be repaired, etc. But there's nowhere near the level of damage out there that would be considered. Now, the people who are doing those, giving advice, I believe, have only probably done 10 or 15 ponds in Southland. There's another chartered professional engineer in Invercargill that's probably done, I think, 3 this year. That's his first ponds he's involved in. The other chartered professional engineers in Southland haven't got time to get involved in ponds because they're too busy doing earthquake work under the Building Act. These ponds come nowhere near what the Building Act requires. A 20,000 cubic metre pond comes under the Building Act. Anything less than that, which is 99% of all effluent ponds, don't come under the Building Act. And the requirement in here, this is trying to sort of fudge the fact that, oh, this is under the Building Act and stuff, and the ponds have to be built under the design criteria of a Building Act, but no need for that level of certification. But also, in the initial process of consultation, never was it mentioned that chartered professional engineers were going to be required. So there's been no consultation on this process at all. It was just put in under the rules, and that was it on the 3rd of June. I also a bit worried about some of the things that when ponds started to be done in 2006 or 2007, Environment South would give advice, do this, do that, and now I think a lot of those ponds wouldn't comply with the new rules, and I'm concerned that there's going to be people coming out there, like I say, a new batch of engineers, you need to do this. You're not 50 metres away from your waterway, therefore this pond is not suitable, therefore you'd have to build a new pond. And that advice is already going out there to farmers. This pond, you're going to have to reline it. That clay pond, no, not suitable now, we can't sign it off, sorry, it has to be relined. Doesn't cost $140,000 though. Now also, massive pond capital is now being used. Prior to that, there were 60, 90 day ponds based on low application, high application. That is now, there's now high risk and low risk soils in the Massey pond calculator. It means that all these farms, a lot of farms out there with only high risk soils on them, and there's probably, I don't know, I haven't worked it out, but probably 50%, all those ponds are going to have to be increased in size, which is a big expense, and yet that was the best advice at the time from Environment South, and I used to do those calculations based on rainfall and stock, etc. And I believe that that's another one that is quite harsh on a lot of people who spend a lot of money on building ponds. In practice note, it talks about superly qualified people most times. There's just one paragraph where it talks about chartered professional engineers. I've been in the industry, civil engineering industry, for 45 years, and I know some things. I've done probably 350 ponds to 400 ponds in South Otago. Whereas the advice given to Environment South is given by people who have done very few ponds. So there's issues there. Now also I find since I wrote this, there's issues going on there. I think there's applications going in as non-conforming activities that are being approved and therefore not requiring CPNs to sign off. I also believe that drop tests and structural tests are being done by non-chartered professional engineers as well. And also EES are now rejecting drop tests and structural tests done by chartered professional engineers because they don't like what the answer they're getting. And that's also been happening. And so already the new rules are being flouted, I would say, by the system. One in particular, the Environment South would want another report by another chartered professional engineer, that would be the third one involved at that stage, potentially $25,000 to do that testing. And so I believe they're going to go back to suitably qualified people. But also, IPNs are changing the naming of all the different categories of people within their system, and now I'll be called a chartered engineer soon, and chartered professional engineers are going to become licensed engineers, and there's three categories the government want. IPNs probably want more than that, but that'll go through the legal process, through Parliament, etc., to decide what they do there. So chartered professional engineers still stay there as far as their qualifications go. And they should be held up with respect. I've worked for initially registered engineers and chartered professional engineers. I've been a technician basically through, but with, you know, 10, 11, and back in 2007, I was asked by Environment South to go and visit leaking ponds and to determine what should be done. And now just to be said, oh, sorry, don't need you anymore. We've done all the ponds, mostly in Southland, just go away and we'll use chartered professional engineers. Now, I've worked with a lot of chartered professional engineers in Southland. There's three that I've approached. They're not interested in ponds. They're too busy with earthquake stuff. One said, I prefer clay ponds. There's no money in a pond. I'd bother all Environment Southland want to do is somebody to sue. So that's what he's thinking out there. Well, I'm using one in Queenstown. Another practitioner used the one out of Dunedin or Timaru, and this sort of thing. There's a lot of extra cost involved with that. And so I have a chartered professional engineer down here every 6 weeks or a month. We work around 12 to 18 properties sort of thing at that time, his head's ringing at the end of the day. But, I think we've gone a wee bit too far that way. So that's all I'd like to say. I mean, any questions? Yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple of things I'd like to ask you about before I hand over to the panel.
I can't hear. Hearing aids, but I don't always work.
All right, sorry about that. There's a couple of things I want to ask you about before I hand over to the rest of the panel.
Yep.
We've had submissions very early on in the hearing from Dairy Holdings Limited, and Rob Potts came along and spoke to us. He suggested that a way forward might be to require chartered professional engineer sign off if the effluent storage required a building consent. If the effluent storage didn't require a building consent, then it could be done by a suitably qualified person.
That's the law as it is now under the Building Act.
Yeah, so would you be happy with that kind of approach?
No problem whatsoever.
Yes.
No problem at all.
So
no.
You'd be happy with that approach?
Yes,
you'd agree
definitely.
With Rob Potts
yes.
on that?
Yep.
Okay.
Because I don't think there's many ponds in Southland over that 20,000.
Mm.
I mean, there might be half a dozen.
Yeah.
But very, very few. Yeah. And they've got to be under the Building Act. They've got to do them and go through the council, the local district council as well for those ponds.
Yeah. And have you looked at the interplay between Rules 32 and 35. Rule 32 deals with effluent storage, and Rule 35 deals with the discharge of the effluent onto the land. Have you looked at how those rules interrelate?
I probably have, but it was sort of a year ago, I suppose.
Okay. Because currently, Rule 35 deals with the discharge of agricultural effluent on the land, but it requires a drop test for the pond.
Yes.
Whereas in my mind, that sort of duplicates what should be in Rule 32, because Rule 32 already talks about
drop
that
test.
Kind of thing.
Yes.
Do you think we need it in both rules, or could it just be in Rule 32?
Well, just as long as it's somewhere in there, and yeah. Also people probably apply for the discharge permit, then it gets checked every 10 years or something.
Right.
I'm a wee bit worried now there's ponds that are lined that were 5 years ago, signed off by certainly qualified people, are now being asked for to redo a drop test and that. And there's a perfectly good inspection chamber there at the side of the pond you can look down. You probably heard it all.
Yeah.
Why would you go into a drop test? You don't need to look in that. There's no effluent in it. There's no problem.
Now, we've had quite a few submitters have said, look, they've got modern ponds with inspection.
Yes.
They use different words, but inspection chambers or inspection drains and things.
That's right.
And the point's been well made that if they have those, there's no need to do a drop test, so we're aware of that as an issue.
Drop tests cost lots of money. I've got one farmer who's done spent $7,000 on two, no conclusive result from it. And, I mean, we used to do them with rulers and take photographs and do evaporation trays in the pond, and, you know, a couple of mils, you'd think that was leaking.
Mm.
But now that's acceptable, you see, so I think we're tighter back than they are now.
All right, I'll just see if we have any other questions for you. Lord, any further questions?
I was just picking up on your comments about reconsenting, because there are a number of structures, as it were, put in places that were fine at the time. You've made mention of that.
Yes.
But when it comes back to reconsenting, then technically they are sound, but then effectively they're in the wrong place. So,
yes.
In your view, how should they be treated?
Well, if they're not leaking and they're structurally sound, I don't believe there's an issue. And a lot of these were discussed with Environment Southland at the time and, you know, went through hearings and things like that, and there's been no issues with them then. And now I think you've got to retain them, but I think there may be a higher level of, especially if they've lined and they've got an inspection chamber, there should be somebody who does look at that each year and sign it off. Whether that's a farmer who takes a sample and takes it down to a lab and does it, something like that. It is an issue potentially, but I mean, even if you've got ponds 100 metres away and a wee bit of a slope, if something failed, you know, the wall collapse or something like that, which you don't see happen, but if something like that happened, it would get to the stream anyway, I believe.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be able to stop. You've got 2,000-5,000 cubic metres of effluent in there, you just won't stop it anyway. Even a lot of the inspection chambers are below the level of the highest water level in ponds, which is asking for trouble if it does leak. But I've also seen ponds with inspection chambers that have had a liner in them and they've been punctured. A drop test done was perfectly good because the existing pond has been good enough and the liner is actually pressed down on the subsoil and not allowed to leakage in the bottom of it. So, because the leakage would be inside a place where something was dropped on the edge or something.
And my other question, you made a comment for a start, and I'm referring to the your original submission. You've got a diagram there of measuring
sort
of water.
The distance from the...
Yes, yeah. And I'm just looking at your 25A and B comments.
I haven't got that diagram here, but...
I have here. I hadn't thought about measuring it like that, so I'm really asking, would you like clarification as to how to measure
Because I think the aim is to get, you know, 3 or 4 metres on less than 4 degrees distance back from the edge of the water. But it's from the edge of the water, it's not from the top of the bank. If it was from the top of the bank and you went 4 metres back, that works well. But if you are a metre down and take it from the edge of the water at 4 degrees, you're going back 13 metres. Instead of, and every day, every dairy farm in Southland have to move all the fences. And it's a complicated way. You actually have to take a level on the riverbed and a level on the top of the bank, take a slope. Whereas you can work out a series of charts. If it's 1.5 metres, then you go back this distance or whatever. But if you've got less than 4 degree land, all you want is that 3 metres of that flat land. And when that tilt goes up to 10 degrees, then you want 10 metres back. If you take it from the water edge, a lot of drains, most drains are down 1 metre or 2 metres because they're all cleaned out by Environment South, and every year you're going to get lower and lower and lower, and the banks all came in. But yeah, so the story.
So I think from your diagram, we actually need to make sure that it is, there's a commonality of how we actually measure.
Yes, across the board, yes. Because the way you read it in the law, it doesn't sort of work out all that flash.
Yeah. Yes, I've seen other submissions come through with different ways of holding tape uses of a little beer, and it's so I think clarification would be good.
I'd almost think a surveyor put the rule in place, because he wants to go and survey all the streams himself, and it'll take quite a while, give him a good backload of work for the next 3 or 4 years.
Thank you.
Here.
Well, it's been good to have a practitioner submit before us, but I have no questions.
No questions for me. Thanks very much.
No, it's all been covered. Thanks very much, Murray.
I'm sorry, hard to hear you, Norris. Sorry.
I haven't. Lloyd asked. I was going to ask about the slope thing because I didn't understand it, but I think I do now. Yeah. So, thank you.
I have no questions too.
Yeah. And just in terms of that issue, I think there's confusion out amongst people, which is understandable that they think where the plan refers to the bed of the river.
Yes.
That you measure it from the water's edge, but the RMA defines bed as including the banks. So it's where the river goes at its fullest flow without overtopping the bank. So you'd actually start the measurement from the top of the bank.
Yes.
But I understand that the rule's not all that clear on that. So that does need to be clarified to align with what the RMA actually says. So
from the top of the bank is good.
Top of the bank, and we're aware that's an issue that needs to be resolved.
Yep.
So thank you very much for coming in and making your submissions today. Yep. So that's the end of submissions for today. We reconvene on the 4th of September, is that correct? 4th of September here at 9 a.m. Great, thank you very much.